This is Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping. With your hosts, William Whitebread and Mark Audio Slave Stewart.
Hey, motherfuckers, welcome back to another episode of Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping, with yours truly, Mr. Willie Whitebread, and my illustrious co-host,
Mock.
Audio Slave.
The Vindicator.
Dead.
The Violator. Mock the Audio Slave. Okay, in lieu of Halloween right around the corner, we decided to do an episode on shock rock.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. Shock rock. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about shock rock. What does shock rock mean to you, Mark?
Well, shock rock means to me is pretty much anything that's visually or audibly in your face, out of the norm. It's going to get your juices flowing. You're going to turn away. You're going to be shocked.
Yeah.
You're going to be scared. You're either going to fight or flight. You know, you're going to love it, or you're going to be like, no, this can't be going on.
And 100 times out of 100, your parents are going to hate it.
Oh yeah.
If your parents hate it,
no doubt.
They're doing their job and you're listening to the right shit.
That's correct.
Correct.
Of course.
Okay. So, and it's funny too, because in modern day times that we have now, can you label any or name any modern day shock rock bands? I can't.
Modern day?
I mean, you still have the older guys doing their damn thing.
Yeah.
Any shock rock? Because what's going to shock this generation?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Pretty much nothing.
Yeah. Nothing at all. Like, you would have to have a public suicide on stage.
I mean, I guess the latest one would be like Ghost. Now, those guys, I mean, or In This Moment, that's another kind of one.
That was my choice.
What's that one band that was at Rockville a couple of years ago? I'll think about it and get back to it. But
yeah,
there was another one that dresses up like Alice Cooper style.
Yeah. So. Well, but that's what I'm saying. Like, in modern society now, we have such a, you know, back then when shock rock was first invented, and or not invented, more so when it first came around, you didn't have the internet.
No.
So you couldn't just Google guy gets throat torn out by Wolverine in Amazon rainforest and get 17 videos.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So back then when Alice Cooper came on and he was screaming about 18, they were like, oh, look at this scary motherfucker. he chops his head off in a guillotine, and motherfuckers are like, dude.
I don't think he started off with the full act. But Avatar, that was the band I was thinking about for the modern day. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so I looked into shock rock a little bit because I know shock rock, I know the label of shock rock, but I didn't know quite its roots or where it came from, or, you know, what the complete lineage was behind shock rock. Did we get the Michael Misfit Martinez stamp of approval?
Yes, we did, actually.
Holy shit. Thank you, Michael. Okay, so shock rock actually began with circus performers.
Right.
That's where they got the idea behind it, was like, okay, so back in those days, back in the 50s, they're like, all right, well, Elvis is doing the leg thing. That's cool. The Beatles are freaking people out with that electric freaking monstrosity solid body guitar they're playing.
Right.
Yeah, they're freaking people out that way. So how can we take it to the next level?
That's exactly how it happened, man.
How can we take it to the next level? A guy named P.T. Barnum in the 1840s, he was kind of labeled the godfather of shock oddities.
Yeah, because he had his circus, and he had his little sideshow.
His bearded woman and shit like that. People were lined up because people, I don't know, man, people like to see weird shit.
Right.
They like to be, you know, confused. They like to be intrigued, and they like to be afraid. It's an adrenaline rush for people.
Yeah.
And guys like, you know, Screamin' Jay Hawkins and Arthur Brown and Alice Cooper, they made a label off of this. And they're like, they picked up on that because they're like, how do we become different? How do we pull this attention from the Beatles?
Right.
You know what I mean? So let's start with Screamin' Jay. Let's start with Screamin' Jay Hawkins a little bit.
So, his most famous success was 1956 with I Put a Spell on You.
I Put a Spell on You.
Yeah, and that was redone by Manson and several other artists. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, what was he? He emerged from a coffin. That was his,
well, that was
his
a,
claim
to
fame, wasn't it?
It was kind of his claim to fame, but it was more so a stunt. that was put together by, because he was on a late night radio show.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey man, because he was already coming out with the bone in his nose, right, with the voodoo stick, you know what I mean? And he was, you know, walking around grunting, hup, hup, I put a spell on you. You know,
did you ever watch those old Munster episodes?
Yeah,
remember Eddie was obsessed with the one guy on the television, and that kind of reminds me of Screamin' Jay.
He probably was a representative of Screamin' Jay.
Exactly. Then you have that guy. Ooh, I'm howling, baby.
Yeah,
one DJ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of that can kind of be tied back too, because I think Screamin' Jay, he kind of took the influences from circus performers and mixed it with a little bit of those older blues cats like Howlin' Wolf.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because Howlin' Wolf had that Screamin' Jay sound, and Screamin' Jay just made it weird.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He made it fucking weird. You know?
Well, yeah, the dude had a skull-shaped microphone.
He
set off smoke bombs on stage.
All that kind
of
shit.
That was before he had fog machines, so they had to get the smoke from somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so that, I also listened to a few different things about him, and apparently the motherfucker was a liar. Like, he was known to be a pathological liar.
Right.
Like, he went into the service in 1944, underage, because he was in an orphanage and obviously wanted to get out, born in Cleveland, Ohio. It's fucking cold as shit. If you ain't got no money, you're cold.
Yeah.
So he went into the service, and he left in 1952. However, he liked to tell stories, you know, that he was a POW in a Japanese POW camp. None of that shit ever happened.
Well, why would he do that?
But, hey, he was a performer. From a lot of the people that talked about him, they say he was strictly a performer. He didn't care what he had to say, what he had to do.
Just lie till you fake it till you make it.
That's right. He was going to put a spell on you. That's what he was going to do.
Mm.
And it was also said that the motherfucker had 57 kids.
Wow.
57 children. That was pretty good, actually.
Okay, thanks.
So, Screamin' Jay. That was a cool song.
Yeah,
I put a spell on you.
That was it. Was unique. It's a unique to this day. It's still it's on my Halloween playlist. I don't know about anybody else.
But. Yeah, and even so, like I watched the music video a few different times, and it's not only like if you go see Slipknot or you see Alice Cooper, they're sitting there, they're doing the cliche frontman stance. They're putting the front leg on the monitor, and they're fucking tilted up like this doing the frontman belt.
Everything's been done before.
Right.
So,
but Screamin' Jay, dude, that motherfucker was creepy. He was weird. Like he would sit there and look around confused and hup,
fucking Uncle Fester and shit.
Yeah, he would start grunting and do it. I put a spell on you.
Ooh.
Yeah, ooh, doing all those crazy Halloween sounds and shit, man. That was just cool.
Yeah.
That was cool as fuck.
Yeah.
Anything else about him?
Oh, man. No, well, there was a copycat during the same time, a British guy, songwriter named Screaming Lord Sutch.
Wow.
So that was his little
wow.
That's the only other thing I know about the guy. You know, other than the fact that he was the godfather, the one who originated shock rock.
Yeah. Well, he started that bridge between horror film and theatrics and circus acts,
right,
and rock and roll,
right,
you know what I mean, which is cool because he was, I mean, you got to think, this guy was playing in the 50s,
yeah,
right, so he was up there with like Jerry Lee Lewis and Buddy Holly.
People
and stuff
were looking
like that.
At that guy like, what in the literal fuck is going on,
right,
you know,
right,
why are you even dressed like that, talking like that? No one, he's way ahead of his time,
right?
That's what it was,
precisely, man. Yeah. Like he Because you got to think, people are listening. They're like, okay, they just bought the new Beatles album, right? And they're listening to Buddy Holly and Jerry Lee Lewis and Johnny Cash. And then here comes fucking Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
We also got to think, the mid-50s, that's when Halloween kind of took off.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I
mean, yeah,
it was around, I guess, earlier than that. But
it was sanctioned.
Right. Yeah. This was like, you know, kind of like bringing Halloween into the mainstream. Exactly.
The mainstream. The main vein.
Exactly.
Main vein.
That's it.
Yeah.
So.
That's it.
You know, there was only, in the 60s, there was only a couple different artists that were destroying their instruments, like The Who.
Pete Townsend, man.
You know. And then came along Arthur Brown. So why don't you go ahead and get into a little Arthur Brown.
Arthur Brown, I didn't know much about the man before we decided to do this show. I had heard his famous song, Fire.
Yeah.
But I didn't, other than that, I didn't really know much about it. And the big thing about Arthur Brown's music is he kind of played on, I think, something similar to what Slayer played on.
Okay.
Because if you watch the music video for Fire, he was a theater performer.
Yeah.
First and foremost, that's right. that's what Arthur Brown was. He was a theater performer, a theater major over there in England. He was born in Whitby, England. So that's the kind of circuit that he ran with.
You had Jimi Hendrix doing some onstage stuff too during that time.
Yeah.
But he was bringing to it, you know.
Right. He did that's a good point that you made. He did share a lot of bills with big name mainstream.
Well, I was just saying
more
because, you know, Jimi Hendrix was known to set his guitar on fire.
Yeah.
Arthur Brown was known to come out in a flaming headpiece.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So I mean, fire on stage, I guess. The early, you know, pyrotechnics rock and roll, if you will.
Yep, and that's what I would say. I think he's kind of the bridge between not so much horror, but pyrotechnics, because that video Fire, it came out in 68 as a single, and it was kind of looked at as a portrayal of a satanic ritual.
I could see that.
Right.
I mean, who wouldn't look at it that way?
Because like you said, back then, that's when Halloween's coming around, because before then it was heavily sanctioned. It was a very...
And Halloween was known as a witch's, you know, holiday.
Yeah.
So...
Right. And so that was kind of Arthur Brown's shtick. He was he would strip naked while performing, because that's a big thing in theater.
Yeah.
Like if you go to Broadway or see a lot of theater performances around Europe and things like that, it's not uncommon at all for the performers to strip naked. Now, over here in the States, you know, specifically in the Bible Belt and things of that nature, like, you're not going to see shit like that.
Well, when we get into what I'm going to get to later, you may have changed your opinion on that.
Okay.
Yeah. So then comes along a guy named Iggy Pop.
Iggy Pop.
Now, Iggy Pop, you know, he was a one of a kind, too, you know, for the time. He's throwing his body all around on stage, you know, getting all nimbly bimbly in front of the crowds. And it's just, you know, no one's seen anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, what? Again.
What is this?
What in the frickin' going on here?
Yeah. He used to do, I read an article and I actually saw a few pictures where somebody had thrown a beer bottle on stage and Iggy did like a back flop on it and started grinding his back into it and got up and was just bleeding. This is when he was with the Stooges.
Going with it, yeah.
Yeah, just going, man. Yeah. Like feeling the music.
Psycho.
I guess, man. Well.
He's still doing it, man.
I know, he's old as fuck.
He's like 78 years old.
Yeah, well, he's like Keith Richards. He's going to fucking outlive us all.
He's fit.
Yeah,
you know, and so is Jagger. So
I don't know, man. Keith, I don't know. I know I mentioned this in a lot of episodes. I still don't know how Keith and fucking guys like Keith and Iggy Pop are even still alive.
Yeah,
I really don't understand it. But along in that same timeline, I want to mention an honorable mention that was crazy as fuck in that punk rock circuit in the Northeast. Gigi Allin, dude.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
I mean, that guy was. Looked up.
Yeah. I saw it, an interview where he went on, like it was like an Oprah-type show of that time. One of those, you know, whatever talk shows, you get a car, whatever things.
Yeah.
And he was like, you guys think I'm the Antichrist? You're the fucking Antichrist. You're the ones that walk around worshiping a false god and all this kind of shit. Dude, everybody in the world hated Gigi Allin.
Oh, well, dude, I mean, he was tackling songs about pedophilia, racism, wife beating.
Yeah.
I mean, all of the stuff that you're not supposed to, all of the taboo crap.
Yeah, you know, and shitting all over himself and throwing it at the crowd and rubbing poop in his cuts and just pissing on himself and drinking. I don't know, man. That guy took it
to
a new level.
He was always on the booze, always on the drugs.
Yeah. Even after he died, that dude was literally laying dead in an apartment during a house party, and there were strippers, videos and pictures of strippers partying on his dead body.
Insanity. And he also spent a lot of his life in prison.
Oh, well, yeah. You know, go figure that.
He probably would have died a lot sooner if he didn't.
Yeah. And I just don't understand. And I feel like if it wasn't for his shock value, that he wouldn't even have been mentioned, you know, because the guy was not a musician.
Well, then there's that thought. I don't know if it's true, but around the internet right now, they're saying that Christian Bale is going to be playing Gigi Allin in a movie about him.
Movie about Gigi Allin?
Yes. And that he wants to portray it as real as possible by doing legit stuff with cutting himself and shitting on throwing it at, you know, people. So I don't know. We'll see how that turns out. But Christian Bale.
Good God, man. I don't know if I would take that role.
He no, it's not that he's taking it. He wants it.
Really?
Yeah, he wants to do it. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with that.
I don't know about all that, man.
Who knows if it's true.
Anywho.
So going over to our next artiste,
yeah.
Would you say Alice Cooper would probably be next on the list?
I would.
Now, there before you get into Alice, I want to make a reference to what Alice said about Arthur Brown. He said, quote, "Can you imagine the young Alice Cooper watching that with all his makeup and hellish performance? It was like all my Halloweens came at once." Now, he's talking about Arthur Brown.
Yeah.
So that's where Alice Cooper got his idea to start what he was starting through watching Arthur Brown.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Arthur Brown was obviously, he was a huge influence on Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
You can see that in his theatrics, you know, because Alice Cooper, he wasn't, you know, like guar in the sense of intensely gory. He was gory enough with the guillotine and cutting his head off and stuff and with the boa, whatever. But he kind of bridged Arthur Brown's theatrics with hard rock.
Right.
And it was a semi, by today's standards, it was a semi tasteful, you know, because he also bridged shit like glam. He bridged shit from like the New York Dolls and stuff like that, because they would come out in women's clothing and do all these different kind of things.
It's funny because he's a born-again Christian.
Oh, I'm sure he is. He's 74 years old. Well, no, I probably will be too.
I don't know when he I don't know when he started, you know, if it was a while ago or just recently, but when I saw him in the last interview, I saw him on television. He was saying, yeah, he's like, I'll go to church on Sunday, and then Monday I'll fly to whatever city I have to fly to and then turn into Alice.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he. I was actually looking at. He's touring right now, and he's playing at a show in Orlando, and for $750.
He's come to the Florida Theater like 600 times in the past.
Yeah,
10
I saw
years.
Him. I saw him. I've never seen Motley Crue.
I wish I was. I had to work that day.
Dude, he blew the doors off Motley Crue.
Really?
Blew the fucking doors off of them. That 70 at the time. I think he was 69 or 70 when I saw him. He came out there. It's like kind of like Ozzy, man. Like when we saw Ozzy, he sounded too good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he was lip syncing. I would like to think he wasn't.
Right.
But that motherfucker killed it.
Oh, yeah.
And for $750 down there in Orlando, you can like have a meet and greet with him and hang out with him after the show.
For fucking $750, you get a meet and greet anybody.
Yeah, I'm not going to pay that. But screw that. Be kind of cool. But yeah, like you said, he kind of invented the rock and roll villain, because Alice Cooper didn't come on for a while. He was born Vincent Damon Furnier. Mm-hmm. And so he was looking for a shtick, right? And so kind of their little claim to fame is in their high school, they had a talent show. And he got his original bandmates together, you know, Glenn Buxton on lead guitar and Dennis Dunaway on the bass. And they made fun of the Beatles. They were sitting up there and dressed up as the Beatles and made fun of the Beatles and like wrote a bunch of parody songs to Beatles songs.
I could see they won
first place.
I was going to say, I see people liking that because there was a lot of hatred toward the Beatles too. Yeah. As much as there was a lot of likes, there was a lot of hatred.
Yeah. Yeah. So Alice was definitely an interesting character. They moved forward a little bit from that because they realized, you know, they're like, hey man, we won first place at the talent show. We got a shtick. We got something to move forward. We're watching. We're interested in shit like Arthur Brown, and I think at the time they were kind of a pioneer or a lead guider in the I'm sick of the hippie shit movement. You know what I mean? Because a lot of those bands back then, you know, the hard rock bands, we're talking like Sabbath and Deep Purple and Blue Cheer and all these guys, they were sick of the hippie shit.
Right.
You know, and they wanted something harder, faster, stronger, you know, and eventually give birth to metal. But so anyway, in 66, they changed their name to the Spiders, released a couple singles, and began traveling to L.A. to perform gigs and shit like that. And hence, Alice was born.
Hmm.
Right?
Because
you got to think back then, too, all these clean-cut, I wouldn't say clean-cut guys like Jimmy and Janice and all that, they weren't clean-cut, but they also weren't gruesome.
Right.
They were rock heroes, you know what I mean? People looked at them as like rock gods, rock heroes.
Yeah.
And Alice, I think, portrayed the first depiction of a rock villain.
Right.
You know what I mean? Somebody you love to hate. Mm-hmm. Somebody sinister.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So I always thought that was really kind of cool.
That's definitely the way it went down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever look into the chicken incident?
No.
In Toronto?
No, I don't think I've ever heard that story.
That kind of blew. That was kind of the time where Alice blew up. It was in 69. They were at the Toronto Rock and Roll Festival in September 69. They were doing their, you know, their stage performance because, you know, he would guillotine his head off. Mm-hmm. And another thing they would do is they would take like 20 feather pillows mm-hmm. and bring them on stage, cut them open, and shoot them with CO2 cartridges, and the whole fucking stadium would yeah. fill up with feathers, and it'd be crazy, whatever. So anyway, somebody threw a chicken on stage, and Alice didn't know where the fuck it came from.
Like a full dead chicken?
Yeah, live chicken.
Oh,
like an okay. Ozzy Osbourne type thing.
Okay.
Threw a fucking live chicken on stage, and how Alice describes it is he's like, I'm from Detroit. I don't fucking know nothing about no birds. I just see wings and, I don't know, a fucking bird. I throw it up in the air. I figured it's going to fly away. Mm. Well, it landed in the front row, and the crowd tore it to pieces.
Oh, shit.
And it's funny, and it's interesting, because the only people that were in the front row were the wheelchair section.
Ah.
So they fucking tore it up. You know? Yes. And so, onward, forward, it was, you know, the PETA people were after him. The, the rumors turned into Alice killed a chicken and drank the blood on stage.
And that was the first of that nature.
That was the first of the shticks.
That's pretty wild. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Cooper's cool, man.
Hey. I don't have anything against the guy, you know. He's a good artist.
Except for what is that piece of flaming hot wet garbage you sent me to listen to about 2 weeks ago, and you actually described it as just that, hot wet garbage. His new EP that he put out.
Oh yeah, let's
discuss that for a second.
That was terrible.
Awful. I mean,
He's pulling for straws on, I guess, his latest. I mean, the instruments sound good for what it is, but his vocals were terrible.
Yeah.
And let's just say the music was terrible, too, because he's got a lot of control. He wanted that old school Chuck Berry sound.
Yeah.
With his, you know, and that's not what he is. I mean, maybe that's what he likes, but it doesn't sound like Alice Cooper. It sounds like Alice Pooper.
Alice Pooper. I think he was trying to go a different direction. I think it's a little too much, a little too late in that regard.
He should have stuck with like the Lita Ford days, you know, with the 80s metal type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, the guy, he was a working man, because I'll say his big prominence was probably from 69 to 73.
Yeah.
And he dropped 7 studio albums in that time. That's 4 years.
That's
moving serious. And shaking, yeah,
that's
dude.
Definitely getting it out there.
Yeah, he was moving, man. And
well, he wanted to strike while the iron was hot. He wanted to make the cash, man. That's what he's about. It's just a big cash cow for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he loves the music.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm sure.
I mean, it's all about making money.
At the end of the day.
For him.
You know, if you're gonna put your heart and soul into it, you might as well make it profitable and pay the bills, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fame and fortune, hand in hand.
Yeah, and I think he inspired... I think Alice, because Arthur Brown's a kind of a, you know, he's known probably in that community.
Right.
But he's not super well known.
No.
Screamin' Jay Hawkins, you know, they know I Put a Spell on You.
Well, then that's where, in the mid-70s, that's where Kiss came into play and said, hey, listen, you know, Alice, you're cool and everything, but we're taking this shit up in a notch.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I think the influence came from Kiss. Alice Cooper.
Well, Alice was first.
I know, but I think Kiss they're influenced by Alice.
Oh,
is where they came out.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And Kiss, too, like, I'm not a huge Kiss fan.
Neither am I.
Yeah, I'm not. But their early stuff, like, if you listen to, like, 1974 Kiss, like, their self-titled album, and then listen to, like, 1977 Kiss with Love Gun.
Yeah.
Different band, dude.
Oh, for sure.
Completely different band.
And then
band.
You fast forward to Bill and Ted's God Gave Rock and Roll Kiss.
Yeah, I can't mess with that. Yeah. But Kiss, man, like, I know we had Tricky Dicky Rick Renegade on here not too long ago, and he had mentioned something that was very true with Kiss, is they became a symbol. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, they are the metal band of the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, besides Sabbath, but that was 60s.
Yeah, but they're not, you know, they're not good musicians. Like, you know what I mean? Ace Frehley and you know, Chris and Gene and
I mean, they're
all
terrible, but they're definitely not, like, you know, drop your jaw on the ground type musicians. Yeah.
No, they're not. But they're
But their entertainment value is where they make up for it.
Right. Because they, I think with Kiss, they stepped away from, they found their shtick in theatrics.
Of course.
Again.
Gene Simmons, the biggest dick in rock and roll.
Right.
Also the biggest money mongrel.
Right.
You know, I got to give him credit where credit's due. I mean, that was probably mostly him, you know, with the blood and the tongue and the, you know, that's where Gwar got their idea for the big ass, you know, boots and gear that they wore.
Yep. I mean,
so they did have a lot of originality when it came to the stage performance and the entertainment.
Huge originality.
Oh, yeah.
Huge originality. I mean, I don't have anything personally against the band. Obviously, they were intensely influential throughout rock and roll history.
Right. Because I think when they first started, they were performing without makeup, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then one day they said, let's just put this makeup on and see what happens. And that's bang.
They wanted a shtick.
They got one.
Yeah. They wanted a shtick. You know, they started off as a Wicked Lester. And 73, and then quickly changed over to Kiss. You know, and I think it's even interesting too, like the way they spell their name with the backwards S's that symbolize the Nazi SS symbol.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, just one of those like stick it to the man type of things.
Oh yeah.
And it's interesting too because we talked about Alice Cooper being a big, you know, parents hate him, and shock rock is usually predominantly hated and forbidden by parents, you know, because they just don't understand, man.
Yeah.
You know, but Kiss, they had kids in the front row of the show, and
parents,
kids,
parents loving them.
They loved it.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I remember being a kid, and Kiss was on, like, national TV, and, like, it was, like, ABC at 9 o'clock, you know, for during Halloween time. Kiss is going to do an hour and a half performance on TV tonight, kids. Let's all watch. And, like, I had a Kiss little plastic guitar and shit. Like, they were mass marketing all that shit to the kids.
Oh, you probably had a Kiss lunchbox.
I might have.
You probably did.
I might have.
I mean, shit.
But I think it was more E.T.
Well, they strayed away from that rock and roll villain aspect of Alice Cooper, because you got to think, like, Alice did it first, and they came around so much, so quick after Alice did, that they were gonna get compared to Alice anyway. You know what I mean? They were gonna in the critics and in the papers and whatever, in the papers, they were gonna get compared. Over day, over he. They were gonna get compared to Alice, so they had to do something a little bit different.
Right.
Or else people would have been like, "Man, your music sucks. Alice Cooper did it. Simpsons did it. Fuck off, you know?"
Right.
So they strayed away from the rock and roll villain thing, and they adopted the more circus act theatrics persona.
Right, right.
You know, like Ace Frehley coming out with rockets coming out of his guitar, and Peter Criss freaking up there drumming in the air, which is where Tommy Lee got it from.
They have all their little separate platform stages that they performed on. I think they were probably the first group to do that too. You know, Oh yeah,
yeah. Well, that would make sense.
I don't know of any other group, you know, before them that would have like individualized risers, you know, that they performed on.
Well, God, could you imagine like the after they, you know, their rise to prominence years, like, you know, 75 through 78, could you imagine the budget, like the studio budget they fucking had, man? You know?
It was like, do whatever you want. You guys are you know, rock gods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got the fucking semi-trucks backed up to the show venues they were at. They probably had three or four deep, you know?
Oh, at least.
Or maybe one for every performer.
Maybe.
You know?
That was back in the time when bands traveled together, too. Yeah. Like, we're all going to this city together. Now they all have their separate tour buses and sleep overnight and, you know.
What band were you talking about? What is it, Mick Jagger, that has his every hotel that he stays in diddied up? How, like, he has his little man servants and lady servants go in there and diddy up his hotel room like his home? Was it Mick Jagger?
It was Mick Jagger, yeah.
Wow.
Super douche.
Wow. I just want my house to look like my house. I couldn't imagine, like, everywhere I went, I have... Okay, Jeeves and Janet, I want this whole place to look at my house. I'm going out for a crumpet and some tea, and before I come back, I want everything here, even Toto the dog.
Yeah, when he goes to the hospital, it's going to be like the water boy.
Yeah.
Bobby Boucher, please put everything the way I like it in my hospital bedroom, please.
Yeah, exactly. So, Kiss, they came out with... I think they had six studio albums between 74 and 77.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive, you know, for a 3-year span.
Yeah.
But then they started going their own way, and obviously they came back for some reunion tours and all these kind of different things.
And I think what Paul Stanley had like a solo career,
stuff like that.
Yeah. 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 Paul Stanley had his solo.
Do you want to move on to another artiste?
Yeah. Who do we have next in line?
Well, I think the next one, we're not going to spend too much time talking about this particular band. I really have much to say, is Wasp.
Wasp. When did Wasp start coming around?
In the 80s, man.
Was it?
Yeah.
I have one band before them, but we'll talk about Wasp and then we'll get
to
them.
Go ahead. Was it the Plasmatics?
No, I got the Misfits.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
I got the Misfits, which is a different aspect because all these bands, we're talking Alice in Kiss and Screamin' Jay, he kind of combined blues into rock and roll and theatrics, whatever. The Misfits created their own little subgenre, horror punk.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, because Halloween and all this.
I remember Halloween.
Yep.
Yeah. So they were founded in 1977 in Lodi, New Jersey. Shout out to my buddy Dan Stadnick. He loves the Misfits. So, I know he's glad we're talking about it here.
Heck yeah.
So they were formed by keyboardist and lead singer Glenn Danzig and Jerry Only, as well as Mother, which... And also Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein, which is Jerry Only's brother.
Okay.
Yeah. And there must be some weird, like, spike in testosterone in that people's family. Because have you ever seen Doyle, the guitar player?
No.
He's a fucking monster.
Yeah.
And Jerry Only looks like a linebacker that could literally play for, like, the Seattle Seahawks. He's giant. Both of them are fucking
and
giant.
And Danzig's a big guy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big wide, not big tall.
Yeah.
But he's got a big ego.
Even so, I mean... Can you imagine? No one wanted to fuck with the Misfits.
Exactly.
They were
straight horror.
Punk kings.
Yeah. They were straight horror. And I feel like, I think this is a good lead off from Kiss because the Misfits, they were not fantastic musicians.
Yeah.
But they sung about shit that wasn't being sung about. You know what I mean? They were talking about, you know, raping mothers and killing babies and all this kind of, like, Last Caress. I'll rape your mother today.
Yes,
you know what I mean? And so, which is the first song I ever heard by them. But anyway, so they were doing something completely different. They stuck on the straight up horror side of things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was their shtick, and they went home with it.
So what exactly happened? Like, why did they break up?
Why do you think?
I don't remember.
Glenn
wanted to go solo and do his own thing.
He wanted to go solo and fucking peaced out.
And he did.
Yeah, he did.
He successfully, too.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know any other songs by Danzig other than Mother.
Dirty Black Summer.
I don't know if I've ever heard of it.
Never heard that
one?
I had a buddy of mine in high school. He was a big Danzig fan. He had the cow skull on his arm and stuff.
I got the Misfits skull. I don't know if I'd get a Danzig skull, though.
Nah, well.
Maybe if somebody bought it for me.
Yeah.
But they did come out with two albums with Danzig, Walk Among Us in 82 and Earth AD and Wolf's Blood in 1983, with the original lineup. And then they disbanded right as the second album came out in 1983. And then became the big legal battle between Glenn and the rest of the guys over music rights. Obviously, and so that's kind of how that formed.
Who won the battle?
Actually, Jerry Only and Doyle won it.
I was going to say, because you never hear Glenn performing Misfits songs, right?
No, but they're touring right now. They're actually doing a reunion show at Madison Square Garden at the end of the month. I would really love to be there.
That's cool.
That's fucking really cool. But they did pick up a little bit of speed. They broke up for a while, and then they reformed in 1995 with Michael Graves and drummer Dr. Chud.
Okay.
And they released a few albums, the most prominent probably American Psycho in 97 and Famous Monsters in 99. And then they broke up again in 2000. And then they had a 25-year reunion tour with Black Flag guitarist Dez Candina and Marky Ramone.
Yeah.
So they became a staple, and they also became an icon, man. Like, you see Misfit skulls on everything.
Oh, dude.
The Crimson Skull.
I see one at least one a day on someone's car. You know?
I got one on my car.
There you go. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The Crimson Ghost has become a staple.
Yeah.
You know, and like that song, have you ever seen the music video for the song Scream? Theirs?
No.
Oh, it's fucking fantastic, dude. It's set in like a hospital setting, and Doyle's walking through. They got all the gruesome makeup. They look like zombies, and they're taking over a hospital. It's pretty fucking cool.
So let me get off topic just for a second because you're talking about videos. Did you see that? You saw the video I sent you with that Slayer. They're doing an acoustic Slayer. That was shocking to me.
It was almost cringeworthy.
Right. I was like, so I don't remember who it was.
Ariah.
Araya.
Was it Araya?
So you guys, and what was the name of the song? Do you remember that?
I don't remember the name.
It was one of their famous
song.
Ones.
Yeah.
But that was a sick video.
Yeah?
Yeah, these.
But it's just a very unique thing to see Slayer doing that.
Well, ukulele.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like the ukulele players turn into like these demons. And
oh, yeah, the chick you're talking about.
Right.
Oh, and I thought you were talking about Tom Araya playing.
No.
Playing acoustic, because I saw a video of that, too.
The one I sent you.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
Where they had a bloodbath.
That was actually pretty cool.
That was, like, shocking when I first
saw
it.
That female singer?
What?
Yeah, they're all kind of sitting there playing ukulele, and then it flashes the lights, yeah. Like, in an old elevator, and they all start fucking dying and things.
The players turn into demons, and, like, the people around them get slayed and eaten. Sick.
That was kind of cool.
It was sick. Okay, so we're in the 80s. So
we're in the 80s.
We're going to, you know, Wasp was around.
I don't know much about Wasp.
I don't either, and I never liked them. And so, like, we could just kind of just, like, skip them, honestly. Because they were shock rock, but they were shock rock for the wrong reasons. They were kind of just, like, you know, racist, I think. I don't know.
Racist.
Yeah. But so King Diamond and Ozzy Osbourne going solo, those were the shocking. Motley Crue, that was a shock in the 80s.
Yeah.
Motley Crue, just because they dressed up, I guess, and they had the pentagrams, and they were, you know, shout the devil.
Yeah.
That was their shtick. But as far as, you know, like real shock rock, probably King Diamond and Ozzy were the king.
Oh, yeah.
Were, you know.
Well, King Diamond embraced the satanic stuff. Like, guys like him and Venom. Venom, they embraced the, you know, the pentagrams, the satanic. It wasn't like Slayer, who kind of just, they put that label on them.
Right.
And they kind of just ran with it. Like, Venom and King Diamond embraced that
shit.
Yeah,
they were actual Satanists.
Yeah, they were
well,
actual
Satanists.
I think Wasp
was, too, but.
Were they?
Yeah. And then Ozzy, you know, claims nowadays that he never was. But back in those days, he was saying it all over the place, you know.
I mean, you got a song called Mr. Crowley.
Exactly.
You know, Aleister Crowley was one of the biggest satanic magicians.
His album cover is obviously Diary of a Madman, you know. Yeah. And then what was the Bark at the Moon?
Bark at the Moon.
I loved his album covers, you know, growing up.
Oh, yeah. That's back when album covers were still good.
And then he had the whole, you know, we're not going to get into it, the whole, you know, eating the head off a bat thing, you know. That was unintentional shock rock.
Yeah.
You know, because he didn't intend to do that.
Well, he probably didn't even know where the fuck he was at that point.
Well, he claims he thought it was a rubber bat, so.
Yeah. But. Yeah, well, I don't know about all that.
So then we move into a group called the Plasmatics.
Plasmatics.
Have you ever listened to them?
Once or twice. I've heard them.
They're actually not too bad. They were in the 80s. They were actually formed in Yale University by an art school graduate named Ron Swenson and Wendy O. Williams. Now, they broke countless taboos. Chainsawing guitars, blowing up speaker cabinets, sledgehammering television sets. I mean, blowing up automobiles live on stage. I mean, these guys were just trying to go big. I don't know. Whatever they wanted, were going to do on stage, they wanted to be noticed by the public.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a shtick, man. That's what you needed to do. Like, Venom used to pull some shit like that. They would throw raw meat into the crowd and stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
They had a member of the band, and she was known for just sitting there fondling her tits the whole time.
Wow.
While they were playing. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd see that.
I mean,
I think
I'm not going to say what it said next, but
what'd they say?
You wonder it.
What do we got?
That's what she's doing.
Scratching next. Her sweaty snatch and eating the drum kit, amongst other playful events. Was that an official word in like Rolling Stone?
Yeah.
Really?
This was how they described Wendy Orleans Williams. Wow. For short. They call it.
Yeah, I would say. Wow.
Wow, Wendy.
Wow, Wendy.
Didn't know you had that in you tonight.
Yeah, I guess Maria Brink is taking a
little
bit of...
Well, didn't you have in you tonight? Wendy?
Yeah, exactly. That's probably a better question. And I also want to talk about something, too, that was pretty significant since we're talking about the 80s. The PMRC, the Tipper Gore thing.
Okay. All right.
The parental advisory explicit content stickers.
Do you know the first album that had that sticker?
No, but it feels to me like it would be Twisted Sister or a Megadeth album.
It was actually Two Live Crew.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so horny.
Really?
Oh, so horny.
Oh, my God.
Yep, that was the first one. And I remember explicitly because my buddy was like, explicitly. I had to have my mom go buy me the new Two Live Crew because it's got these stupid fucking advisory parental things on them now.
I know you see a lot of movies that has that as the ringtone. Oh, me so horny. Yeah,
I came from what? Full Metal Jacket? No.
No,
it was.
Was it in there?
Full Metal Jacket is where that came
oh,
from.
Oh, me so horny.
Yeah. Me love you long time.
Me love you long time. I thought you were talking about the ringtone came from.
No. Huh? I'm saying where that track.
Right? Yeah. But see, back then, like, it had a reverse effect because the PMRC and Tipper Gore, they called them tipper stickers. They thought it was a huge triumph. They're like, oh, sweet, man. We got, we got this parental advisory sticker on here. You know, we're going right. to let, this is going to prevent, you know, moms from buying shit. No, this actually exploded it. This has exploded the scene because you got to think about it, man. Like when somebody tells you, oh, man, this movie, dude, this movie's real gruesome. I don't know if you're going to want to watch it. What do you want to do? That's the first thing I want to do is go watch it.
Yeah. Don't watch The Evil Dead. That's like the scariest movie ever made.
Yeah.
What? Where can I rent it?
I immediately want to go home and get this movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that's the effect that it had. Like all Alice Cooper stuff, all the Shock Rock guys.
That's the marketing. That's the marketing, genius of it, you know.
That's the marketing stuff behind that. So who came next?
Next, well,
we're moving into the 90s, right?
Then you have to talk about Gwar.
Gwar
was you know, before Manson.
Yeah.
So when Gwar came on the scene.
They came in the 80s.
They were late 80s.
Yeah, late 80s.
Yeah. But they didn't really start getting taken off until like early 90s.
Yeah.
They were out of Virginia, Richmond, Virginia.
Yep.
In the 80s.
Yep.
They were a collaboration of artists and musicians. Mm. So, like, you know, you had, like, a bunch of different backgrounds. That's where the puppetry and, like, the stage, you know, presence came from. They were inspired by the writer H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm.
Okay, so a lot of their multiverse character costumes came from Cthulhu mythos, I guess you call it.
Okay.
So, you know, they had, you know, a lot of crazy shit. Like, they were pretending to murder each other. You know, they didn't like a group called the Mentors. We'll get to them in a second.
Yeah.
Because they condemned them on when they were on their Jerry Springer show, when they were on that show.
Right.
Because the Mentors advocated rape. That's why they didn't like them. But Gwar... I've seen Gwar personally like 9 times. They were the first concert.
I've only seen them once.
They were the first concert I ever went to. I can't say enough about the stage performances, man. They were just
Holy shit, freaking
great. You know, back in the 90s,
yeah.
Compared to when I saw them the last time before the lead singer died.
Yeah.
It was like a different band. Like yeah. I saw them at Freebird the last time I saw them, and it was like... The stage was so small, they couldn't even move in their huge, giant Kiss boots and costumes, let alone do any kind of like puppetry, you know, performance. But back in the 90s, they used to have this this wheel they used to bring out with this dead body. It's just called the Wheel of Torture.
Yeah.
And so they'd spin it on stage, and then the wheel would stop, and then he would rip off a body part on the wheel, and of course, they'd start splitting blood and blah, blah, blah. And then the lead singer, Odoriferous, used to take his fake junk out and pretend like he was having sex with the corpse on the wheel, and then he would turn around and he would spew green and
green
black
cum all
and
over
it
everybody.
was all different colors of the rainbow.
Yeah, he was nuts,
Dave,
man.
The lead singer Dave Brocky, man, he was a really, really original artist.
Odorous Arungus,
and
man.
You know, people say that they never had talent. Maybe they didn't have the best talent. Maybe they weren't like top 40, but guess what? You know, for what they were, the metal act that they were freaking awesome.
But
man.
Talent and what? That's what I want to say. Like, what category are we putting them in? Like, pentatonic scaling or soloing? Or, like, is that what we're defining talent
as? Because it was, like, a lot of stop-and-go rock, you know, because they'd stopped and performed. And
I'd say originality and theatrics and stage performance, that's...
So, I mean, their costumes were always outrageous.
Yeah.
They were made out of, like, you know, like, hardened rubber and foam latex. And they always had, like, bare parts that were accentuated with makeup, you know what I'm saying? But they were a very scantily clad group as well. Now, everybody knows that they were famous for spraying blood and stuff on the crowds.
Yeah.
Now, I did a little bit of research, a little looking around. Most of the fluids, that they were made of water and powdered food coloring, which, for the most part, will flake off when you go to wash it out of your hair and your clothes and stuff. The thicker fluids were made from a clear seaweed extract called carrageenan.
Huh.
Which is used in ice cream and milkshakes.
So super organic. Anybody lactose tolerant is just fucked out there.
The first time I saw them, they came out for an encore as their secondary band called Dead Cops.
Yeah.
So when they came back out for their secondary encore,
yep,
they started spewing out blood, and it was a darker blood. Everybody thought it was like animal blood. You know,
yeah.
We knew that there's no way it could have been, but a buddy of mine was getting a mouthful of it in the front. It was nasty.
I remember when I saw him, man. I don't remember when it was. I want to say it was back in like 07
yeah.
or 08. I saw him in Orlando with Lamb of God. They opened up for Lamb of God.
Oh, so you didn't see a full-on Gwar performance.
No. Well, and it was nuts, though.
It's crazy. I mean, every club had a... you know, cover up all the speakers and stuff because they didn't want any damage to their clubs and stuff. But so they didn't use any corn syrups for their stage blood because those dry solid and they didn't want their costumes to get damaged. So,
well, and plus, too, they probably didn't want to put anything there that was, you know, potentially toxic to people to start getting sued and shit.
Now, bear with me. They have a live show that mutilates pretty much celebrities.
Yeah.
And political figures.
Yeah.
So let's read a couple of the celebrities in the past shows.
Sure.
O.J. Simpson, John Kerry, Mike Tyson, every American president since Ronald Reagan,
yep.
Jerry Garcia, Pope John Paul II, Osama bin Laden, Michael Jackson, Al Gore, John McCain, Hillary Clinton, Paris Hilton, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Adolf Hitler, Lady Gaga, Marilyn Manson, Jerry Springer, Mr. Lord Eye, Sarah Palin, Snooki, Mitt Romney, Pope Francis, Justin Bieber, Tony Abbott, Donald Trump, and many, many others. That's a lot of puppetry, man. That's a lot of freaking shit to carry around.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. You want to say there's no talent there. Like,
and then every year they have the barbecue.
Yeah.
They used to have the barbecue before for Dave OD'd on heroin a couple years ago.
Yeah, 2014.
They also have their own barbecue sauce flavors.
Really?
They have their own vape flavors.
That's cool.
They have a lot of like marketing skills.
Yeah, well, that was their shtick.
Yeah,
they were marketers.
That's how they made their money, by touring. That's how they made money.
Right. You know? I don't know, man. Like, I think they were great. When I saw them, they killed Paris Hilton and George Bush.
Nice. Yeah.
They decapitated Paris Hilton, and they brought out like this gigantic dick.
Yeah.
That you had and like all eight of them were sitting there like heaving on this thing until it just sprayed fake cum all over everybody.
It's such a great show.
And of course, I was like, you know, 19 in the front row. I was like, yes, please give me all your fake cum. It was awesome.
Now, they were nominated for two Grammy Awards, one for Best Metal Performance for the movie SFW.
Okay.
And Best Long Form Video for Phallus in Wonderland. So
Phallus in Wonderland.
Could not believe. They were actually nominated for Grammys.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Theatrics. Yeah, whoever said they had no talent is a fucking idiot.
As far as Shock Rock, they're probably like my top three of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
They're definitely up there, dude. For sure.
So who's next?
It's got to be Marilyn.
Got to be Marilyn, you know?
It's got to be Marilyn Manson.
Yeah.
That dude, he brought a whole nother aspect to it because he probably sat down, you know... He was probably sitting down, old Brian Warner. He was sitting there. He was going, all right, well, I want to be weird. I am weird. And obviously, I'm from Ohio, so I'm inherently semi-weird. And so I want to do something that Alice and Kiss...
I think it's from Boca, but maybe that was later.
No, he moved over there to Fort Lauderdale area.
Yeah.
And then that's when they started getting a little bit bigger.
Gotcha.
I think he moved over there when he was in like high school or... you know, something like that. He was just born in Ohio. He spent the majority of his life here in Florida. And so he did. And he started, I think with him, his shtick must have been he combined sexuality.
Yeah.
Weird, perverse sexuality into his music.
Right. Kind of like horror sex.
Yeah.
Mainstreaming.
Right. And and whereas Gwar, you know, they were executing past presidents and all
and
this
they had
kind of
Sylvestria
shit.
On stage, but
right, but they weren't like directly coming out and saying it.
And they didn't have John 5 busting out these killer guitar tones, you know. Right. I mean, the music was there.
Right.
That, you know, for me, Portrait of American Family is in my top 20 of all time greatest albums.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and they started off as you know, the Spooky Kids, and then it was they started combining their names with you know, with serial killer names, obviously, hence the name Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so Twiggy they started
Ramirez.
Playing. Yeah, right.
I was roommates with Twiggy Ramirez's cousin.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, and another fact. I used to work at the Boca Raton Resort and Club down in Boca. And the girl I knew there, she was a little older than me at the time. Her boyfriend was in a band, and they used to open up for Marilyn Manson. So they were all buddies. And she said for their first appearance on 120 Minutes, you know, the Manson crew, they all came to their apartment to watch it because they recorded it, you know, on VHS.
That's super cool.
Yeah, pretty sweet.
Yeah. That's super cool. But yeah, he definitely...
Yeah, and he used to work at that record store, Coconuts in Boca.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I bet you they're like, yeah, man, fucking Manson used to work here.
Brian.
Brian. My buddy Brian used to work here. So yeah, he started having his rise to power in the mid-90s. Their first album, Portrait of an American Family, came out in 1994. Not a super well-known album, however.
Dude, I listened to that motherfucker.
Did
that,
you really?
That summer, I listened to nonstop Manson and Nails, you know? And
yeah.
That album fucking might have wore out.
My dad was huge into Manson.
Oh, dude, Manson was king that summer, for real.
Yeah.
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 I've seen them probably like 7 or 8 times, too.
I've never seen him.
Really?
Nuh-uh.
Oh, man.
He came. I feel like his big rise to power though was probably Antichrist Superstar.
Yeah,
that's when, you know, the Beautiful People and shit like that came.
Well, my
out, like
first
Warren
time
Boy
seeing those guys, it was at the small ass club in Jersey called the Birch Hill.
Yeah,
and it was we dropped some acid that day.
Yeah, yeah.
And we went, and dude, there was nobody there except all these gothic people, man. And like, it was like the weirdest thing in the mosh pit, dude. And like, you see like these guys with they weren't fake vampire teeth. They had like implanted vampire teeth, and they were in the mosh pit just like. And then Manson was like, you know, like as far as we are, that's how far he was from us, because the stage was small.
Wow.
And there was nobody there, and he was like spitting, and I would see trails coming off his spit. Like, I'm like, get me the fuck out of here. Yeah. I wanted to leave.
Especially you. You're a germaphobe.
I wanted to see him so bad, but I was so fucked up. I was like, get me out of here. But yeah, we stayed the whole show.
Yeah, I can't. I can't
great.
Handle that.
It was
shit.
Great. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely super prominent in the mid to late 90s, early 2000s, man.
Like, oh, yeah.
And he was super controversial, man. Like, when he got naked on stage. Well, not naked, but, you know, he was in that, like, bodysuit, whatever, that you know, BDSM suit that he used to come out with. Yeah. And I feel like he started reclusing a little bit. Because you remember the Columbine? I'm sure you remember the Columbine stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because Get Your Gun, that famous single he had, that they wanted to retract that single. And he was like, no, fuck that.
Yeah. He was that's funny you should mention the goth guys too, because that I feel like Manson was the true pioneer and catalyst behind the goth scene.
I could see that.
But I really do.
I mean, there was other bands at the time, but yeah, he was definitely the first and foremost of that category.
Yeah, and Reznor produced his first album.
Oh yeah, he. I mean, one of the times I saw him was going to Nine Inch Nails at the Philly Spectrum.
Yeah,
and Manson opened up.
Yep. So yeah, Manson was a huge public figure.
And then he fucked Manson, or I don't know who fucked, but remember that song by Reznor? It's called Starfuckers.
Yeah.
It was about Manson fucking him over.
Yeah.
Once he became, you know, famous.
Yep. That's right, man. And that was probably after that first album, shortly after.
It's probably The Hand That Feeds. That's probably another one, you know, that reference to Manson.
Yep.
But he was a prick, man.
Yeah.
You seen that video where he would like be like kicking John 5 on stage and shit?
Yeah.
And John would be like, get the fuck off of me. He threw his guitar down like, you're going to keep kicking me or I'm going to fucking kill you. And he's like, I'm sorry. And he's laughing about it on stage.
Yeah.
You guys look it up on YouTube. It's a fucking retarded video.
Diva and a half,
I can't believe that happened.
Yeah.
You know, I would if I was John 5, I would have quit the band that day.
Oh,
that,
for sure.
Apparently, that was every day, all day long, he was doing that
Is
shit.
Is he still
him.
Playing with him?
Hell no. He's playing with Zombie.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's playing with Zombie. Yeah. Good choice.
Yeah.
Another shock rock band.
Yeah.
Zombie. Another shock rock band. That's another horror band. But yeah, so Manson, after Columbine, he was blamed for a lot of it. And then after that, he kind of reclused from the public eye a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of held back and was like, all right, we'll back this up a little bit, because he started getting some like death threats, like serious shit. Like, you know, the FBI was knocking on his door and, you know. So anyway.
We want to go on to some other bands if you want.
Sure.
The Mentors. Now, that was the one that they were talking about, like, raving crap, you know, and they were, I'm not going to get into them really too much. They were garage punk metal, I guess you can classify them that, but one of their big claims to fame is 2 days before Kurt Cobain died, the drummer, El Duce.
El Duce.
He claims that Courtney Love offered him money to kill Kurt.
Really? Oh, I remember seeing that. El Duce.
Yeah, El Duce.
I remember seeing that on one of the, I think it was not Soaked in Bleach, but it was a different one. It was on Kurt and Courtney documentary on Netflix.
Okay.
They did an interview with him.
Yeah,
they're talking about it.
And who's to say he's not telling the truth, really?
Who's to say?
I mean, who knows? There's another one called the Dwarves. That's another another band. You know anything about those guys?
Nuh-uh. When were they around?
They were around the 90s, I believe early 90s. Okay. Their reputation was wildly unpredictable. Stage shows featured sex, blood, furious fist fighting between each other on purpose. I mean,
some real G.G. Allin shit there.
They were a mess.
Nice. I like messes.
The guitarist, he went by He Who Cannot Be Named, would perform in a jockstrap and a wrestling mask.
Perfect.
And they claimed he was dead as a publicity stunt. Now, Manson did kind of the same thing. He, one year when they were making it big, he also said that he was going to commit suicide on Halloween night on stage. So everybody was like waiting to hear November 1st. Is Manson dead?
Is Manson
no.
dead? No. No. He's just going to go kick John 5 a little bit is what he's going to do.
And then we can go into Rammstein.
Rammstein. There's one that I want to talk about most prominently, which came out around the same time as Rammstein. Slipknot.
Slipknot.
Slipknot was a very, very prime example. And I think because the majority of these shock rock bands that we've talked about tonight, aside from maybe, you know, Venom, they were predominantly hard rock. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't seriously, like I said, other than Venom, I wouldn't classify them as metal. And I think Slipknot brought the metal scene to the shock rock scene to the metal scene.
It just all depends on what kind of metal you're thinking about.
Right.
Back in the 80s, Ozzy was considered metal, you know?
True. I'm talking about like,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Hard, heavy
metal.
Death, black metal type
black
stuff.
Black metal type stuff. You know, we've talked about Slipknot before. In case you didn't check their episode, see that episode of ours. They were formed by Sean Crahan in the early 90s. They picked up Corey Taylor from Stone Sour in 1997, and that's when they recorded that absolute fucking bombshell of a self-titled album.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I, you know, their self-titled album, which dropped in 1999. And I think one of their biggest moves forward in that was kind of their more commercialized sound when they got, like, Sid Wilson, when they got DJ Starscream in there to start. Because they compound a whole lot of shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Stage presence and theatrics with hard rock, with a little bit of hip hop influence, with Sid on the turntables in the back.
And it didn't sound all jumbled and fucked up.
No, it sounded great for nine people.
Yeah.
To get that coordinated, like that sounded pretty fucking good. And that's impressive.
That's a lot of practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very impressive.
Yeah.
And I remember you had mentioned why, you know, the whole maggots thing. They call their fans maggots. And I did a little bit of digging on that. And I found out kind of the reason. Well, what Sean Crahan says is the reason why. Now, when I say this, you have to take this with a grain of salt, because this is also the guy that before shows in their first, you know, three or four albums used to keep a fermented crow in a jar of formaldehyde, take a big whiff of it before going on stage, and sometimes puking into his mask, and he would play the entire show with this fucking crow stench up his nose and puke all over his mask. Anyway, so he describes it. He's like, the reason we call our fans maggots is because we're playing to a group of people that we want to portray our pain and our hate, you know, and we want the maggots to feed off of our pain and our hate. And if you didn't know, maggots eventually turn into a fly, and then they can eat shit and go fucking fly around to somewhere beautiful or somewhere great or somewhere not great.
He thought a lot about that.
Yeah, after the fact.
After Corey Taylor went, hey, you maggots, here we go.
Yeah, right. I don't buy it for a second.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds good to the, you know, to the press, but I don't fucking buy it for a second. And I'm going to leave with that shtick. I'm going to leave Slipknot with that shtick of, if you guys have not heard their new fucking album, We Are Not Your Kind, it is great. It is fucking phenomenal. You have got to listen to it.
Go see them on tour. They're going to be performing that whole album in its entirety on their on their performances this year.
If they come to Jacksonville or close, I'm going.
Yeah, I'll go with you.
Yeah, all right, Rammstein.
Yes, sir.
Rammstein.
Now, they are a German band.
They are.
They are considered the German Metallica, even though they just because their sound, I guess. But they have that keyboardist, man, who makes their sound even better.
Yeah.
In some aspects.
And that's what I was saying. Like, the same thing when Slipknot, adopted Sid Wilson.
Yeah.
You know, it brings it together.
That other element is you're getting is definitely worth the frustration of having them in your band at first.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And their stage performances, Kiss had pyrotechnics, but Rammstein?
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
So the singer, Till Lindemann shoots balls of fire from his crossbow, swallows fire, and he wears angel wings that blast fire from the tips.
Yeah.
As well as a stage invader that they have come out on stage, and they set him on fire.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of fire going on in Rammstein.
Dude, well, so much so that a lot of places banned them, even a lot of places in their own country of Germany, banned them from playing and touring because it's fucking dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's fucking dangerous to have them come out and play.
You got the keyboardist who's boiled alive in a
Christian
flaming
cauldron.
They boil him alive in a flaming cauldron.
Yeah.
On stage.
Yeah. Fantastic.
While the lead singer sits on a pink cannon and ejaculates foam all over the crowd.
Yeah. I love it.
Hey.
I've wanted to see them ever since I learned. My dad was also a huge Rammstein fan.
Du hast.
Yeah, du hast.
I hate you. You hate me.
And it's funny, too, because their lyrics, they sound so fucking hard, right?
Yeah.
But you look them up and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's really not that bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that song.
I'm pretty sure they didn't want to be X'd by all the parents. They wanted their kids, you know, to be in their fan base as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's cool too because I think they compound everything. Stage theatrics,
yeah.
Sexual tension.
Right.
You know what I mean? Hard rock. Metal. It's all of it.
They're a diamond in the rough.
They're great.
They're good.
I think their first four albums are probably the biggest bombshells they have.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
Like their newer stuff, I was kind of, the last album, I was like, it sounds good.
Their 97 album, Sinnshut, or however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
That was a absolutely phenomenal album. Absolutely great album. That had, I mean, to me, it was almost singles from start to finish. 11 tracks of nothing but singles, 43 minutes of fucking, I don't know what you're saying, but I love it.
Have you heard of a band called Lord Eye?
Yes.
Have you seen what they look like?
No.
So they are another shock rock group. They're out of Finland. I think that they came around like 2006.
Okay.
They're good. Musically, they're good. They look like Gwar, mm-hmm. like with the football gear and all that stuff, but they don't have all, like, you know, the blood and gore.
The blood and gore and theatrics and stage theater.
Well, they have pyrotechnics displays, but they don't have, like, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I do want to bring up a couple other bands.
Sure.
Michael Patton, he formed a super group called Fantomas.
Ooh.
Now, if you guys haven't heard of Fantomas, they are bizarre. But
how bizarre? How bizarre?
Very, very bizarre. So, they have members of the Melvins, Slayer, and Mr. Bungle.
Wow!
So that's what I said, super group.
Wow!
But
the Melvins and Slayer,
super strange. Like they do like Rosemary's Baby. It's like almost all instrumental.
Yeah.
Michael Patton. You know, if anybody who doesn't know, he used to be the lead singer for Faith No More.
Yeah.
He uses his voice instead of like using it like as a vocalist, he uses it almost as an instrument. So, guys, check out Fantomas. It's a very, very fucking unique group, especially during Halloween, because they have a lot of cool Halloweenish type stuff.
That's cool.
Also, another group called One Eyed Doll. Now, this bitch, I saw her open up for OTEP, and she is crazy, man. She has all these like weird like trinkets and puppetry stuff that she brings
on
stage.
Some real voodoo
shit. She puts the goth makeup on, and now it's just her and her husband. Her husband's a drummer, and she's a guitar player. Look them up too. I can't say enough. You know, they won some awards and stuff, but they are also a very good, very good. They were on America's Got Talent in 2010.
Really?
So, yeah.
I'm glad to see something good actually came out of that show.
Yeah, right.
Because that's a rarity.
There was a couple things, I guess, that you could say. But, yeah, very unique, very good band.
Radical.
A band called Rock Bitch.
I've heard of Rock Bitch.
Okay, so they're all female goth. Their graphic live performances include performing lewd sex acts on stage.
Ooh,
that's how we're going to get to the sex acts. This is the band, one of the bands that do it.
Sign me up.
Now, they did the infamous golden condom, where they would, at the end of the show, they would throw a condom out into the crowd, and whoever caught it got to go backstage and do some sexual stuff with the band.
What?
Uh-huh. Crazy.
Wow.
Crazy. And they were forced to disband. British authorities said, nope, not in our country.
Yeah.
So that
sounds about right.
And then the other one is an industrial metal band called the Jenner Torturers. They were out of Florida. And
naturally.
They were known to be the world's sexiest rock band. And they would actually, members of their group would actually have sex on stage while the band's performing.
Wow.
Live.
I mean, have to look that up.
Sick. I
have to watch a little YouTube.
Sick. Yeah. Jenner Torturers.
Yeah.
But let me just do some of my honorable mentions. And then
honorable
mentions.
We can start
wrapping up. If you have any that I miss, I'm going to say Mushroom Head.
Mushroom Head was fantastic. A Slipknot spinoff.
In This Moment, Nine Inch Nails, yep. Rob Zombie, yep. Twisted Sister,
yep.
Mindless Self-Indulgence. He drinks his own pee on stage, if anybody didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cradle of Filth. Cannibal
That's a good one.
Cannibal Corpse. Mayhem, of course.
Mayhem.
And yeah. Lizzie Borden.
Lizzie Borden's good, and Mayhem is also a fucking prominent. They took it too far.
Yo, of course.
They took it way too fucking far.
They all died.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Burning churches. Euronymous. Burning churches crap.
Yeah, burning all churches around fucking Norway and Sweden.
Freaking insane.
Yeah. So anyway, guys, I hope you have a fantastic Halloween. As always, if I could get you to do us a huge favor, go give us a like and share on our Twitter page, our Facebook page, or our Instagram page, or all three if you're feeling particularly generous. It's the Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping page. If you have any ideas for a show, you want to let us know anything, fact check us, whatever you want to do, hit me up at williewhitebread69@gmail.com. And as always, please go on whatever venue you're listening to your podcast on and give us a rating. We love you. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.